Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville. In this podcast, we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I am your host, Zach Moore, and I am joined again this week by Tyler Patrick. What's up, Tyler?
Hey, Zach. How's it going? Thanks for having me back.
Great, man. Great. How you been doing, man?
Doing good. Christmas was a little rough. Solomon was sick the week before. So it was just like, oh, hey, you like your Superman socks? Awesome, Dad's going back to sleep.
So did you get your kids any cool Superman stuff, or did you receive any cool Superman stuff for Christmas?
Let's see. For me this year for Christmas, Superman-wise, I got some more volumes. I'm collecting all the volumes of Smallville Season 11. I decided to really, dig deeper into that. I had some, back when digital comics, were first coming out, and I was, buying all chapters. Then I realized what chapters were, and I was like, oh, I'm wasting my money. So I got the first two trades and the fourth trade. I need to find the third trade of Season 11. And Solomon got the 12-inch figures from BVS because he likes to collect all the big figures. He got a lot of Batman stuff because he loves Batman. I know. Thank you. Thank you for being on my side.
Can you set your kid straight?
I got another one on the way. I'll set her straight. She got a Supergirl outfit for when she's born. He got some Superman socks. And he got this really cool, Gotham Metropolis Daily Planet, playset. So, one side's, the Batcave. One side's Metropolis, little kid playset. So I'm like, hey, this is sweet. Let's play.
Yeah, let's play. Dad wants to
you
play.
Know you put your son to sleep 20 minutes ago and you're still playing. Yeah, so I'm getting it ready for when he wakes up.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. as for me, I posted it on our social media, but let's see. I got the Smallville soundtrack from La La Land Records, so that's cool. So I'm looking forward to delving into that. And then there's the actual music by Mark Snow and Louis Febbery, I believe.
That sounds right.
I'll talk to Craig Byrne. He'll set me straight on the pronunciations of these things. But they both did the music on Smallville, so that's cool. I got a Batman v Superman Christmas tree ornament, which can go anywhere, really. Because I don't have a Christmas tree. I usually just put up a little Charlie Brown Christmas tree. minimalist for the win. So I have that. I got a desk chair Superman cape. Which I've yet to put on my desk chair, so no, I'm not sitting in my chair with it yet, but I'll put it on there. Still getting, we're recording this right after Christmas, so we're still getting all the presents put in their proper place and that kind of thing. And then finally, the most ridiculous one I got is I got some Superman socks, and if you saw on the social media, they have a Marvel tag on them. It's like who made this?
Yes, those I saw that, and I was just like, those are epic. Those were like I wouldn't even want you to take the tag off.
Oh no, I can just never take them off. I have to leave them with the tag.
Because you have to just be like, oh, is this something I didn't know? Was this merchandise released early? What's going on here?
Yeah, it's like I need to just put it in a plastic bag and pin it to my wall. It's like evidence or something. It's just such a bizarre mashup, an inappropriate mashup that I can't open it. I've seen it's, in comic book stores every now and then I'll see a Star Trek shirt with a Star Wars tag or something like that. I don't know how this stuff gets mixed up, but I just find it hilarious. It's like, come on, guys.
I can see it it's at Walmart or Target. Okay, they messed up. Some employee probably fixed it. But at a comic book shop, you should be ashamed.
Yeah, I'm not sure where these socks came from. They were a gift, but I never asked people, so where did you get this?
Those were the ones I would. I'd be like, where'd you get this?
Yeah. I need to go talk. Can I speak to your manager? But anyway, it's always fun. I always get, and I'm sure you do as well, being a Superman fan, you always get certain Superman things. And it's funny. It's just crazy to see how much is really out there. Every year I get new stuff that I would have never even known. I've got a clock before, I'll just whatever, right? I always get my favorite, and I say favorite in quotation marks, is I always get the Fleischer cartoons from people. Have you gotten these before? The 30?
Yes.
Yeah. Because they're available in so many versions. People people will see them the dollar store or whatever. You see them everywhere.
I don't remember seeing this box at Zach's house.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, hey, I found these new cartoons, right? You like Superman, right? I'm like, yeah, I know. I have five versions of these. Thank you very much. So that is the number one thing that I get from people that know that I like Superman.
I've decided to spin it now, and now I give Superman gifts. Oh, hey, this is from Tyler. That's right. I saw your wardrobe and thought you needed a Superman shirt. Merry Christmas.
That is a good way, good reversal of it there. So there you go.
That's what I gave my father-in-law this year. I was like, here you go, Superman. I got Superman sweater socks right before Christmas. Look like a Christmas sweater, but they're socks. They are super thick, but amazingly comfortable.
Well, that's a trendy thing to wear now, like with a suit, like wear like some like custom socks. So at least when in my experience, I've seen people like doing that. Like, yeah, I got a real nice 3-piece suit, and then I got these crazy socks. So
yep. That's why when I have to do dress up and they're like, oh, you have to dress nice. I'm like, all right, how can I still feel like me? Aha, Superman shirt under the suit, so I feel like Clark Kent, and Superman socks, so they can't see it, but I know they're there.
Exactly. Well, cool, man. Well, let's get into our episode discussion. We're talking about Rush this week in the Smallville Official Companion Season 2 by Paul Simpson, available wherever books are sold. Creator, executive producer Al Goff had this to say. After Red did very well, the network said that they wanted another Red K episode, and we said we weren't going to do another one, because Clark turns bad, and then what do? It wasn't in any context. We knew what happened when he did it. Then we thought, what if a friend slits something in your drink and you don't know it? So we told the network we give them one act of Red K, not an entire episode. So I agree with him. I feel like Red K, you know, Red was a good episode as a one-off.
Yes.
And then every use, it just, the Red Kryptonite gets diluted every time they bring it back. Yeah, I understand their struggle, though, because, like, the ratings were so good on Red, and everybody likes to see bad Clark, and they show those clips in the promos all the time. But, you know, you can only do so much with that, right? So what were your thoughts on Red K, Red Kryptonite?
When they do episodes with Red K, I like it because I love seeing the acting that he has when he's bad Clark. But it's one of those things, less is more. Like, I don't want... like it used often, like, oh, let's use Red K.
They do go back to that well quite a few times, and
it's okay to spread out, you know, like here and there, like, but they're like, hey, we just did this a couple episodes ago.
Yeah, seriously, less than 10 episodes ago they just did Red Kryptonite. So
yeah, I mean, I get where, you know, the producers are coming from. They're like, look, we don't want to kill a good thing right now. And I'm glad they didn't try to go, oh, look, gold kryptonite. Or, oh, look, pink kryptonite.
No, I see what you're saying, because they feel like, they're, look, guys, we're getting away from the meteor rocks. They're not green anymore. They're red. It's like, yeah, okay, fine. I did like how they spread out the colors, right? You got that one-off silver kryptonite that Brainiac created. You got blue kryptonite. Gosh, that was season 7. Gold kryptonite doesn't come in until the very end of the series. So they spread out the colors pretty well, because it does get kind of ridiculous how many colors of kryptonite there are. You know, like green I can buy for sure. Red, okay. But when you start adding more and more colors, like it's a whole rainbow of kryptonite, it gets kind of over.
Yeah,
the top.
I mean, when I was younger and stuff and I thought of it, I was like, oh, radioactive pieces of his homeworld. So I always kind of thought of, okay, we have the Earth's crust and the different layers. So I was like, okay, so I could see being a couple different colors of kryptonite, depending on how deep down, you know, to the planet's core, the land structure, well, you know. And then they're like, and then like on Supergirl, when they did Red, it was kind of a synthetic kryptonite,
right,
that was trying to be recreated. So I was like, okay, I can roll with
that. Yeah.
Yeah. When that's like the idea of a man trying to recreate it.
Just like in Superman 3.
Yeah. We'll just add tar. But then there was black kryptonite that split the kryptonium.
I forgot about black kryptonite, yeah.
I really liked what you said on the past episode when you guys were talking about, I think it was Matt, when you guys were talking about the ship, how you had thought, oh, it'd be cool if the ship neutralizes all the kryptonite, you know, so it makes it even more rare when he comes Superman. I'd never thought about that, but I was like, yes, that would have been nice. Because I know eventually, like, somehow Chloe / Oliver get a hold of all the kryptonite and they have it as an arsenal put away, so there's not that much around. But yeah, but still, like, there's too much in Smallville.
Yeah, me and Mike Krause were talking about Visage a couple episodes back.
Yeah,
we talking
it was
about
Mike.
The, okay. Yeah, we were talking about the spaceship. I'm like, yeah, man, that's so cool. They introduced this new element to the spaceship, and then they blow up the spaceship like 10 episodes later.
See, and I always wondered if it was the spaceship neutralizing or the spaceship was protecting itself.
Yeah, that's so weird. And I know that's a conversation for another episode, but that is so weird that the kryptonite would have an effect on Kryptonian technology. Like, I get biology, right? But the technology, I don't know.
Because my thing was always about with kryptonite was it was the planet. You know, it was pieces of Krypton that when it exploded were radioactive. And then you have the idea of, well, you have that radioactive property against the fact of our yellow sun is what makes it dangerous.
Yeah, that's the combination,
right? Yeah, it's not like You know, it's like if I took a piece of Earth to the moon, like it's different.
Well, that's the problem with kryptonite existing before Krypton explodes. You know, that's
exactly
because it's the catalyst of the explosion plus the radiation of the yellow sun that make it what it is, right? But Smallville really throws it out the window with the skinwalkers having it when the Kryptonians came in the past. And anyway, just kryptonite, right? It's just kryptonite is magic, right? It does whatever the plot needs it to do. And in this episode, you know, they decide to use red kryptonite. At least the rules, I will give him this. At least the rules for all the colors are consistent throughout Smallville, right?
Yes. If they're going to introduce a new color or a new style, they keep it. They don't. No one will remember that blue kryptonite did this.
But today we're talking about Rush, so let's get into it.
What's going on, Clark? If I didn't know better, I'd say you guys were on something.
We're just having a good time.
Not that it's any of your business.
Have you ever heard of a phone? I think you're just barging in here like you own the place. It's really...
I came here to tell you, Clark. I talked to Walden. He won't budge.
He won't budge, or you don't want me in the cave? Come on, don't lie to me. You're Lex Luthor. You pay a guy to do a job, he does what you tell him. Isn't that the way it always works?
Clark.
I'm gonna go into those caves whenever I damn well please. I dare you to stop me.
Is this really about a term paper?
You'd love to know, wouldn't you? I'm gonna go. So are you.
I like to see you standing up for yourself, Clark. I really do. Be careful not to cross the line.
Is that a threat?
Just giving you a friendly piece of advice.
Let me give you some back. If you know what's good for you, stay the hell away from me.
Rush is the 14th episode of Smallville's second season. It aired on February 4th, 2003. It was written by Todd Slavkin and Darren Swimmer and directed by Rick Rosenthal. He's actually the director of Halloween 2 and Halloween Resurrection. So he's a pretty, you know, big time, all things considered, director. So that's pretty cool, I think, to have some nice pedigree coming in here to Smallville.
It is. And like you said that name and I was sitting like, I know that name. And then as soon as you said, I was like, aha. I would say a casual Halloween fan, but I know the direct, like I try to keep up with like directors. It's just my thing, you know? So when you said, I was like, I know that name. I mean, just like later on, we'll get Jeannot Schwartz.
Yeah.
Directing a bunch of Smallville, who directed Supergirl, who
and
directed
Jaws 2.
Yeah.
Rick Rosenthal, he directed an episode of Beauty and the Beast, the one with Kristen Crick, the new one. Also directed a few episodes of, you know, other shows. If you just go down to IMDb, you'll see that he has a pretty big TV presence as a director. And then, but the most interesting credit, at least to me, is The Birds 2. He directed. They made a sequel to The Birds, Alfred Hitchcock's classic. It's called The Birds 2 Land's End. It was in 1994. So we're talking like 30 years after the original. I remember getting this tape when I was a kid because, I don't know, I guess my mom and I found it at Blockbuster. We're like, they made a sequel to The Birds? You know, in addition to that, why it's so interesting is he's credited as Alan Smithy, which is the shorthand for when, you know, people in Hollywood do something, but they don't want to be credited for it, but they have to credit someone, right? That's what Alan Smithy is, and that's the credit on The Birds 2 Land's End. So Rick Rosenthal did not want to take credit for that for that work. But anyway, so that's Rick Rosenthal. He'll go on to direct 7 episodes of Smallville in total. So we get into the episode here, and Pete and Chloe show up to the Kawachi Caves, which have been turned into a hotspot for the kids in Smallville. Chloe refers to it as a rave in a cave, which is pretty funny. So what are your thoughts on the Smallville youth turning this into a hotspot for social activity?
I feel like Smallville is the smallest big town there is. The kids are like, I feel like they should be more like the kids in Footloose, where they're like, we got to do something. There's nothing to do in this town. So the idea of making it into like the next place to party seems kind of legitimate just because it's something to do. But where's Lex's security?
Well, he says he fires the guard later, which is in an amusing way. but
I'm like, there could have been a scene of like them like slipping the guard some money, like, all right, man, let's set this up or something. You know, it's just like,
well, I guess it's implied, but you're right. I mean, it's not like 12 kids showed up in here and were like doing whatever. That you had like DJ and scaffolding and like literally like probably 100 people in there. So that was quite a party going on in there, and that's not going to go by unnoticed. So clearly the security guy was in on it or something, like you said, bribed. By the way, so let's think about this. Remember, there was a big like power struggle back in Skinwalker for who was going to get the caves, right?
Yep.
Lionel or Lex. And as we discovered in our last episode, Suspect, I was, you know, I stand corrected, guys. They did address what happened to LexCorp. Forgive me. I forgot that it was a subplot and a flashback to an unrelated murder mystery or attempted murder mystery. So they kind of snuck it in there on us. But Luther Corp reabsorbed LexCorp. So that's what happened, right? So I guess Luther Corp owns the caves now, right?
I guess so.
So what's going on there, right? I don't know. But I guess, you know, Lionel has, he's recovering from being shot right now. So I guess he has other stuff to do. So I guess Lex is still kind of in charge of this for now. But anyway, that was, I think that's something they forgot about when they reabsorbed LexCorp into Luther Corp. Like, oh, Lionel technically is truly in control of these caves right now. But anyway, that being said, the party's going on. And Pete mentions Kyla, who had died in Skinwalker. I was like, whoa, I didn't expect that, because Chloe asked Pete, like, why does Clark care about these caves so much, right? And he's like, oh, you know, Kyla really made an impression on him or something. I'm like, oh, wow, okay. And then Clark mentions her later as well. So I'm like, oh, wow, that's okay. Now I'm pretty sure now there's no more references to her other than, of course, Talisman in season three. So that's cool. It's some nice continuity there.
I like it because it's also a legitimate reason that I'd be like, oh, you know, Clark, he likes caves.
Yeah, exactly. So at least he had that to kind of as an excuse, right? As opposed to his term paper excuse he gives Lexus later. Term paper? Did people write term papers in high school? I think that's a college term. I don't remember writing a term paper.
I don't either. A research paper, maybe. But, you know, this is that high school that's created by a bunch of people who graduated high school like 20 years ago.
Exactly.
Who are just like, hey, what did we do when we were in school? Write papers and dances?
Yeah, dances, okay. At the school gym. they're at this rave, they're having a good time, and this random guy comes up to Chloe and just kisses her.
You mean Mr. Bill Gates?
Yeah, seriously, this guy, if you look up like a nerd in a textbook, that's what this guy looks like. They just like straight out of the central casting. We need a nerdy looking guy. So yeah, young Bill Gates comes and kisses Chloe. She's like, whoa, Travis. His name is Travis, right? Travis, what, you're wasted, man. Like, she thinks he's on something. He's like, no, I'm just high on life. It's just hilarious. I love it when people say that.
I'm just having a good time.
Yeah,
man.
So then he climbs up to the top of this scaffolding, and he does an Almost Famous. Have you seen Almost Famous?
Yes.
He's like, I am a golden god, and he jumps off the roof into a pool. The problem here for Travis is there is no pool. It's just the ground. And he jumps off the scaffolding, dies on impact. Pretty dark, I'd say.
Everyone's just like stands there watching, like, I would have almost liked if people started cheering as if they didn't realize he was dead.
Yeah, like, woo, yeah.
I'm just out of it. They're like, man, you see that guy? That was crazy.
Do you think he expected people to like catch him and like do a crowd surf or what was his deal, man? I don't know.
I don't know. And I say that because later, based on the activity of Mr. Pete, yeah, I don't think there's any logic to it.
Right. They're just looking for the rush. We have two additions to the Smallville tally board. By the way, keep your notes handy here, folks, because we have quite a few tallies to add to the series tally board in this episode. So we have a +1 for Under the Influence, because obviously Travis was under the influence. And we have a +1 for Smallville High School student death, because he's dead. But while all that's going on, Pete had kind of backed up to a painting that we hadn't seen before. It was introduced in this episode. It's kind of like this worm-looking thing with an S on its head. It's like, okay, we get it. It's from Krypton, right? He kind of backs up to this crack in the cave next to this painting. He gets bit on the neck, and then we see that he's under the influence too. So that's another +1. So that's a +2 now for Under the Influence, because now whatever had gotten Travis has now gotten Pete, presumably this bug.
I do like that Pete gets some screen time in this episode and something to do other than just stopping by the Kent farm to say hi.
What he does with that screen time, we can discuss. But
I didn't say it was good screen time. It's just nice to see Pete.
So we go to the opening credits. We come back. Clark is walking down Smallville Main Street, and Pete nearly crashes into him with his dirt bike again. See, I'm so hard on Smallville for this lack of continuity, but here's continuity yet again. The silly dirt bikes that we saw in Skinwalker are back. And Pete's driving it down the sidewalk without a helmet, which Clark berates him for, by the way. So I'm sure the WB was happy about that. Listen, kids, wear a helmet when you're riding these bikes, right?
Oh, yes. Wear helmets, because you know what? Let me tell you a quick story. I like to go four-wheeling. My uncle lives in the mountains of West Virginia. We were out four-wheeling one day, and we stopped, and we went to Lowe's, and my dad was like, hey, I'm going to buy these safety glasses just regular, like, you know, safety glasses because we didn't have any goggles. So we went back for a little bit later. I hit a tree branch that was low. There was barbed wire that had been wrapped in the branch. It busted my safety glasses. Had I not had them, I would have lost my eye.
Oh, my gosh. So
safety is important, kids. Just throw that out.
Safety first. Life lessons, as always, from Always Alone on the Smallville. You know, now that you mention it, were those four-wheelers in Skinwalker?
No, they were dirt bikes.
They were? Okay. I was gonna, because once you said four-wheeler, I was like, wait a minute, Smallville. Did you give Pete a different bike? Because they gave him a different car. Did you notice this? He's on his third car now. I should have had a Pete truck accident thing, because he had that cool convertible in most of season one and beginning of season two. Then he had that whatever version of his car he has now, he had one just like it. But it was red. In the last episode, it got blown up by Ethan, which was pretty extreme, by the way. I don't think I talked about that enough in the last episode. Not only did Ethan shoot Lionel Luthor, frame Jonathan Kent, he was going to kill Clark and Pete. It's
like ridiculous. He's got problems.
Oh, man. I hope he's getting the help he needs. But so that car gets blown up, and then, like, I don't know. It's not a week later. It's some indeterminate amount of time later. Pete has yet another car, and it's a blue version of that car. So I guess he really liked that car. But I'm sure this one's going to get messed up now, too. So.
Why is the color scheme bleeding over to Pete?
Yeah, exactly. Does everything have to be red and blue in this universe? Anyway, so all that to be said, Pete and his vehicles, right? Clark berates him for, you know, reckless driving and stuff, and Pete says, yeah, that's a rush! And so he says rush. Chloe says rush later. There's rush on the Talon marquee. So, like, very good, very good. I always love it when they sneak that stuff in. But that is a plus one to the episode title, said in episode, because Pete says rush. And Pete, you know, he's all hyped up on this adrenaline, right? So he talks Clark up, and he hypes up Clark asking Lana out. He's like, now that Fordman's toast. So look, continuity yet again. They're talking about Whitney being passing away. Man, look at you, Smallville.
Clark goes, hey, Whitney was your friend.
Yeah, he does make comment that was a tasteless remark on Pete's.
I would have been like, dude. He's your friend. He's dead, man. That's not cool.
he died serving our country, Pete. Show a little respect, right?
In Indonesia.
Yeah, in Indonesia, when we were in those military operations in Indonesia in 2002. But regardless, this works. So, you know, the Clark and Pete are having this conversation across the street from the town. So Clark kind of puffs himself up and walks in there to talk to Lana. So, Pete drives off, he says, focus on the future, and he drives off, and made me think of Batman 89, where he's like, think about the future.
Hey, Eckhart.
Oh, I love Batman 89, so good. So, anyway, Clark walks in the Talon, and, you know, Pete, his advice was coming from a bad place, but it does a good thing. Because Clark asks Lana out, and he says, you know, I'm going to use this line next time I want to ask somebody out. He says, we should go on a date together in the near future, which is so funny,
Let's go on a date in the near future. I'm too nervous to pick a direct time or place, but I'm glad you're excited.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's cute. I like it, right? And then she says, are you serious? Which is probably right up there on the list of things you don't want to hear when you ask someone out, other than no. It's like, no, are you serious? Those are the two things you don't want to hear.
My parents always said, like, what's the worst that could happen? She could say no. And I was always like, no, there's other options.
She can laugh in my face. Are you serious?
She can laugh. She can be like, are you serious?
But you know, after this little back and forth, it's cute. And then she says yes. And Clark says, oh, I didn't think it'd be that easy. She says, all you had to do was ask. So... they set the date for tomorrow. So good for Clark and Lana. Like, I'm feeling it in this episode. You know, I feel like they got me back on board for them a couple episodes ago. They kind of reset things after Visage, you know. So I'm feeling it. I'm like, okay. And, you know, they're both happy about it. It's nice to see these characters happy, right? Because it's not going to last very long. So let's enjoy it while it lasts, guys, right?
I just want to know where they're going on their date to the Talon.
You could go to the Talon, the Cave, the Beanery, but you wouldn't want to go there because that's Lana's competition. You could go to Crater Lake. Everybody talks about Crater Lake. You could go to the Gorge, right? I mean, that's pretty much it, right? There's not many places to go in Smallville, but or the Dam. They could go to the Dam. Everybody goes to all the time. Hey, Lana, remember that time you died recently? Let's go revisit that experience over at the Dam. Clark is our next scene is Clark cleaning up the mess in the cave, right? Which is like, come on, Clark, you're being really overprotective here. And then Lex finds him down there and says not to worry about it. He'll have a a maintenance crew come do it. And this is that line that I love from Lex. He says, because he's talking to Clark about, you know, everything that happened. And he says, when I fired the security guard this morning, which is just a funny way to say it, I asked him who else had been down here, right? And then, you know, he says the guy told him that Clark had been down there all the time. And then Lex says, you wouldn't be keeping secrets from me, would you, Clark? Which is like Smallville sizzle reel 101, right? That's like the stuff that you always see in like every trailer for Smallville, right?
Will they find out Smallville?
Yeah, on the next Smallville. So good. So good. But Clark's response is pretty good. He says, Kylie gave her life for these caves. And, you know, which is an interesting statement. Like, what does that mean? Like, why do people know Kylie was the wolf that tried to kill Lionel and all that stuff? Probably not.
But she turned back human when she died, right? So, I mean, in some way they could have been like, they probably had a cover like, oh, Kylie died protecting the caves in some protest or something. They had to spin it some way, so they were like, yeah, Kyla turned into a wolf and attacked people.
Yeah, that's not a good look, right, for her family. So he also says that he's doing a term paper on the drawings, which is like, again, which I mentioned. It's like, okay, sure. But maybe he really is. I don't know, because he has this book by Dr. Walden, and Lex sees that he has this book, and that kind of piques Lex's interest. And so Clark turns the question around on Lex, right? He's like, well, why are you so interested in the caves? He's like, oh, I like a good mystery, you know? So,
which I believe.
Yeah, which is true, but then also they're both lying to each other, right? Which is cool, I think. Clark's reasons are more, you know, for a greater cause than Lex's. Lex, he obviously knows about the octagonal disc and all that stuff. So that's why he really wants the caves. He wants to figure out that connection.
Also, we don't know if Clark actually is writing this term paper. We never see him in class with a real teacher.
No, that's true, because you know, as we find out, Clark has been tardy to school a lot. Did they say his grades are dropping? I'm not sure.
Nope.
But,
nope. They just say he's tardy, but all of a sudden, somehow that translates to get on straight, son. Get them grades up.
Yeah. Jonathan kind of he brings the hammer down on Clark pretty bad about going. You know, you're gonna come home every day after school. I'm like, how is that gonna help if he's tardy? You know, how's that gonna help? But he wants him to stay away from the caves. And then pretty much grounds him, right? But then Clark's like, no. You have to let me go out tomorrow. And they're like, well, why? What's the big deal? He's like, I have a date with Lana. And Jonathan's like, a study date? I'm like, come on, Jonathan. What are you talking about? You know what that is.
He could have said it a little bit more playful, you know, like a study date?
Yeah, but he's genuinely confused. He's like, a study yes. date?
Yeah, like kids still date.
Kids, so many kids today, and they're
in my day, I courted Martha by walking her home from church every Sunday, sitting on the porch.
But you know, because of Martha, Martha's like, "Come on, Jonathan, let him go." And he's like, "All right, well, as long as you get all your homework and chores done, you can go." And Clark's like, "Thanks, Mom."
I would have been like, "Chores, Dad? I could get my chores, your chores, for the next week done in about 10 minutes.
There should be no chores. Just do that. There should be no chores." And then, you know, another thing to note in that scene is, they're apparently looking over. That's what leads into the Clark school talk. They're like, well, if you even graduate from high school, because they're looking at colleges options for Clark when he graduates high school. And they're like, well, now that we've got our money situation figured out, I'm like, really? Because Martha just quit her job at Luther Corp.
I know. But that was my favorite line of the episode. So now the farm finances are under control. I'm like, what does that even mean for when they talk about the farm finances? Because for some reason, this is the farm that's been in the family for generations that still owes a lot of money.
Hey, man, that interest holds no hostages. So Clark is good to go for his date with Lana as far as the kids are concerned. But Chloe goes to the Talon to talk to Lana about just, I don't know, anything. She's like, hey, Lana, I couldn't help but notice that I didn't see you this morning, and I feel like you're avoiding me. And Lana refers to that's how she copes. So are they talking about Whitney's death here? I'm not sure what they're talking about. Tyler, what did you think?
Travis. I mean, look, the poor guy died.
Oh, really? Is that they talking about Travis?
I don't know.
I mean, no offense to Travis. Because I'm sure he's a great guy, or was. I mean, he could have started a computer company if he hadn't killed himself. But
this is an alternate university. That was Bill Gates.
I guess I was thinking Whitney because Pete had mentioned Whitney. You know, so because
she mentions the
terms.
School counselor and everything, yeah. They don't ever really state. Of course, they're going to do some sort of counseling after a student's death for any student who wants it or anything.
Well, there's a lot of plenty of that to go around in Smallville, as we'll find out in the tally board.
Exactly. You know, they probably have a very it's probably a good lucrative job to have as Smallville High School guidance counselor for death. But I, you know, I didn't think about it too much as in who, because you, like you said, it could be Whitney, it could be just about Travis, because even though maybe they weren't close to him, just the idea of a fellow student's death just kind of puts you in perspective of, like she says, they said, carpe diem, seize life, which kind of what Travis was doing when he died.
Well, Smallville does this a lot, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And I'm not, I think it works okay here, but they try to tie every theme together and every like plot line, you know? So it's like the rush is the adrenaline seize the day. Lana's trying to be more proactive. Clark decides to be proactive and ask her out. So they're trying to tie that together. I'm not sure if it quite works, but, you know, whatever.
And I did figure out, I think I know what day of the week it is.
Okay, yeah. You know, can we get into that? Please. Okay, what day do you think it is? And then I'll let you know what I think.
It's Friday.
Okay.
I think the rave was on Thursday because it's a rave. You don't care if it's a school night. Friday because they go to school. They talk about the weekend being the next day for the date. And watching Clark's outfits, they do a good job of kind of keeping him in an outfit for a day and then the next day. So I'm thinking this episode takes place over a Thursday, a very long Friday, and into a Saturday.
A very long Friday, indeed. You know, I was tracking pretty well with the episode until maybe when the morning that Pete shows up in Clark's loft, that really threw me off to what day it was and what was going on. Because they keep going back and forth to school, which doesn't make any sense. I guess Chloe could be there later at night. But so my initial thought was the rave was on a Friday. Right, that was my initial thought, because why would you have a rave on a weeknight? We had the same conversation back when we were talking about Cool way back in season one. Yep. We're all hanging out at Crater Lake, and I'm like, oh, okay, this is a weekend. But then they go to school the next day. It's like, this makes no sense. You kids don't understand. unless you're partying every night, which is insane. Was this college?
That's how bored they are. Like, they live in small, like, harvest season's over. What do we do now? And we're not all working on farms.
That's true, yeah, because usually they're either at the football games or they're working on their family's property or whatever it may be. So I thought it was Friday, and then this day is Saturday, right? But in this conversation, Chloe's like, oh, hey, what do you want to go to Metropolis tomorrow? Or something, right? Then she said tomorrow with her. My dad said he
with
can get
dad.
Us. Yeah, my dad says he can get us out of school early. I'm like, okay, well, if it's tomorrow, then it can't be Saturday. So maybe it's Sunday, right? But then, so I was thinking maybe that is Sunday. But so I completely lose track. We'll revisit this later, but I completely lose track of what day it is because of this kind of stuff. And I know it's really just nitpicking, but it's fun to try and figure out.
Yes, it is just fun. I mean. Just because it's little things when you watch it, sometimes you don't think about it. But then when you revisit something over and over, you're watching, you pick up little different details, and you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah, I mean, look, dramatic storytelling comes first. I think that should always be, like, more important than, okay, well, we have to make sure that it's Friday so they can go to school and all. I mean, yeah, it's that school is just a thing that – school is a non-factor in Smallville, clearly, at this point. But anyway, Lana has to turn Chloe's invitation down because, yeah, I guess maybe – you're right, Tyler. I guess it is about Travis's death because everybody seems, you know, affected by it. They're having a special memorial issue in the torch about it, and this counselor's talking to people, so that must be what it is. I just went to Whitney because he's an actual character we knew about and cared about, and who knows who this Travis guy is. But I guess it's a thing that they can just get away from the troubles of all the stuff going on. That's why Chloe wants to have a girls' day in Metropolis with her dad and then go shopping. Lana has to turn her down because she has plans with Clark, and it's a date. And, you know, Chloe clearly has a problem with this, and Lana tries really hard to make sure it's okay. And Chloe's like, eventually Chloe breaks down and says, does it really matter how I feel? You know, I'd go for it. If I were you, I would do the same thing in your position. So,
yeah, it's harsh, and I feel bad for Chloe, you know. But, I mean, they all kind of did agree to be friends, but then Clark, of course, breaks that because he can't just be friends. And later on, Chloe says that my feelings for Clark are fossilized.
Yeah. Sure. And the thing about this is the problem with only having like four friends, right? So it's like Chloe, Clark, Pete, and Lana. It's like, okay, if you had like a big circle of friends, maybe just, you know, fine, Clark and Lana can date, but I can go hang out with these people over here. But it's like Lana is your roommate and Clark is like kind of your best friend, and now they're dating and you guys kind of dated, but then you play the friend card, and this is a very, very, very complicated web they've spun for themselves, right?
Yeah, you know what kind of character I was sitting here thinking that we kind of need is like the do you ever watch Buffy?
You know, I did not. I know Matt Latham, that's his favorite show. He's referred to it as his Smallville as far as compared to me, so
I watch it. I didn't watch it religiously, but like the Cordelia character was kind of like the one who had ties and was like dating Xander at times on off, but she wasn't really part of the group and she wasn't friends with everyone. But then over time, she kind of became friends with everyone. I kind of feel like that's the character we need. We need like Lana's best friend who's not tied to Chloe, Pete, Clark, or anybody, who slowly over time, like her and Lana grow apart, you know, as Lana grows closer with Clark and them, because it feels like Lana had Whitney and then all of a sudden she just jumped ship and joined the Clark, Chloe, Pete friendship. But everyone else in the school adores Lana and wants to date her, but she has no other friends.
Yeah. It just, yeah, the universe shrinks as the series progresses, definitely. So then our next scene here is with Lex at Luther Mansion, and he has hired Professor Walden, who is played by Rob LaBelle. You know, he's a genre actor. You've seen him in a lot of things. I mean, he's been on, you know, The Dead Zone, Dark Angel, Star Trek Voyager,
Supernatural.
Oh, he was on Supernatural? Okay, I'm sure. Of course he was. All these guys are. But he's probably best known for being in First Wave. He played the character Crazy Eddie. That was a show that lasted for 3 seasons. And I've never seen it, but he was a main character in that show. So that's probably what people know him best from.
And then if you want to jump DC, he played Wally Weaver in Watchmen.
Yes, he was in Watchmen, yeah.
the doctor that was best friends with, you know, Dr. Manhattan, that later got cancer and everything, and that whole subplot. That's where I, like, remembered him from first, was just because I've seen Watchmen so many times, but then I was like, wait, I've seen him on other TV shows here and there, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he does a good job, too. I like the Dr. Walden character. Looking back on it, I looked at how many episodes he was actually in. Not as many as I thought. I thought he was like a long-term recurring guest star. He's really only in like 3 episodes, but it feels like he's in a lot more.
That's what happens when they take a break or the character's absent from an episode or two, but they reference them, talk about them, and then they show back up. It makes it feel like they're present, but they're not.
Yeah, much like Helen. She hasn't been in that many episodes either. But, you know, Rob LaBelle had this to say about playing Dr. Walden. Walden was a fun character. They said they wanted him to be scruffy and have a disdain for people without a lot of formality. So, and I think that he conveys that well. So.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he totally does. I mean, just his whole like, attitude towards Lex about, I'm the best, you can wait till next year, which is good for, I like it because it's someone who actually, like, your Luther money is not going to buy me.
Yeah, he literally, Lex writes him a check. He literally tears it up in front of his face, right?
So I like that about the character. I like that it's the mystery of the caves and everything that really is what, okay, gets him into it, which just shows his passion for his field. So, I mean, I like the character, even though he's kind of a meanie later to Clark.
He's the antagonistic, disinterested college professor. He thinks he's better than everybody else. Spot on. Spot on here. And then, you know, I have to mention that he's in an episode of The X-Files that a lot of people don't like. It's called Ghost in the Machine. It's about an AI. Look, it's the mid-90s, so it's kind of cheesy, but I liked it anyway. He creates the AI that becomes self-aware. But then in the episode, he lives in the same house that Dr. Wells lives in The Flash. So
sweet.
It was just a great nexus of all these shows that I watch. Because, of course, it's all filmed in Canada, and it's this really cool-looking, like, modern, like, triangular-looking house. And I was like, that's Dr. Wells' house. It's Dr. Wallen in Dr. Wells' house. This is crazy.
Do you ever just feel like there's a corner of Canada where it says you're now entering the back lot of Canada?
Yeah.
Where they've just built a city that's just for filming, and like if you go, the only people who are in there are filming scenes. Like nobody lives there. It's just all these sets, these shows share.
Right.
Little buildings and stuff.
One day when the podcast is over and I have free time again with my life, I will go to Canada and I will go on some kind of like, you know, the tour or in a road trip to stop at all these places that I've seen in all these shows over the years. But anyway, I just wanted to mention that. So we'll have an always hold on to Smallville road trip. We'll coordinate it with everybody. We'll rent a bus. It'll be fun.
That'd be amazing.
Coming in 2025. That'll be our grand Smallville tour. Anyway, am I joking? Yeah, I don't know, man. We could probably, if we get enough people, that'd be pretty fun. But anyway,
exactly.
That'd be awesome. As you said, Tyler, Lex's pictures of the cave paintings that win Dr. Walden over, because he immediately like shift gears from like, I'm better than you, I don't need this, to, oh my god, it's at work, can I see these now? So then we cut to Clark and Chloe at the torch, and he thinks that Pete had skipped school that day, which is like, okay, I don't even know what day it is or who's at school when. Why is this night now? I don't know what's going on. But she asks Clark, so any big plans for the weekend? And he just kind of shrugs and says no, and Allison Mack is in the best look. Like, are you kidding me?
It's one of those things, like, I know what Chloe's doing. She's kind of giving him the benefit of the doubt to tell her. And I know what Clark's doing because he doesn't really want to tell her.
Yeah.
Because, you know, because that whole, we'll just be friends.
Right.
And he knows her feelings, you know, he doesn't know yet that they're fossilized. So he doesn't know how to act. But I feel bad. Chloe.
Yeah, this is the dump on Chloe season for sure, season two. Because I mean, but yeah, if you're in Clark's position, you're just gonna like play that close to the vest, and no need to like, you know, upset people until it's the time comes, right? So I can see both their sides on this, but it's like, oh man, feel so bad for Chloe. But you know, as usual, she's giving us some exposition. She's saying the Travis's autopsy had high adrenaline levels, and then he wasn't the only one who died. Two other people, one from Granville High School, and one from I know, right, Granville, and then one from like Smallville Community College. They both died as well. But neither of these other people had died from, you know, they all kill themselves in different ways. Right, it's not like, oh, they got sick and died. It was this guy jumped off of a scaffolding, and this guy did this, and this guy did that. So regardless of all that, Clark realizes that Pete is in trouble, and he goes to find him. And then he sees Pete just running around the street in Smallville Main Street. Pete jumps in front of a charter bus. Clark has to super speed in front of it to save him. And then he says, Pete, we have to get you to a hospital. And Pete does not want to see the hospital visit tally go up on the series tally board. So he is refusing.
He's like, no, we've already been there this week.
we are way over our quota. He threatens Clark. He's like, if you don't let me go right now, I'm going to tell all these people your secret. And Clark's like, you know, he probably doesn't believe him because he doesn't know what's up with Pete, right? But Pete doesn't. Clark grabs again. He's like, he's an alien. He's an alien. He's an alien. And then he runs off. And Clark looks so guilty. He's like, ugh. And like, dude, play it off. Play it off. Like,
I thought of two things right here. I thought of Jurassic Park. Dotson.
Dotson. We got Dotson.
Dotson.
Nobody
See,
cares.
Nobody cares.
I love that.
Exactly.
I love that.
That's what I thought of. Like, he's like, no, nobody, Pete. Pete. He's drunk. Like, you know, just play it off. And then,
I love that Jurassic Park line. I try to use that as much as possible in life. Like, Dotson. We got Dotson here. Nobody cares.
See, that's what I thought of. I'm like, Clark, look, nobody's going to think, oh my God, he's an alien.
Oh
like,
God,
if I run outside right now, if I go to Walmart later and I just say, my wife's an alien, no one's going to believe me. They're just going to laugh it off. Like, there's no grounds or proof that would even people would start to think, like, oh my God, that guy's married to an alien.
Yeah, just random people, right? Not like Lex or anything, right? Just random people in the street. And Clark looks so guilty. It's like, dude, you got to learn to roll with this stuff, man.
People who look like they're getting off a bus stop who are on like a tour, like going to Metropolis.
It's like they're passing through. They're passing through.
And they just stopped at Smallville, you know, to stretch their legs and get something to eat.
Oh my God, that guy's an alien. That's the first thing I would think. So
exactly.
We cut to commercial and we cut back. And you know, after this incident, clearly Clark knows that something is seriously wrong with Pete and then, you know, all these other people. So they go back to the scene of the crime, the cave. So Clark and Chloe go to investigate. And Chloe gets bit. She backs up to that same crack in the wall that Pete did. And I guess a lot of people were, you know, leaning up against this crack in the wall because that seems to be the only spot where these things can bite people. But she gets bit. So we have a plus three now, the running total in this episode for Under the Influence, because we had Travis, and then we have Chloe, and then we have Pete, you know, Travis, Pete, and Chloe. And then Dr. Walsland shows up, and he's very agitated to see there are people here, and he says that no one is allowed in the caves when he's doing his work there. And Lex is with him, and Lex says, well, you know, Clark protests to this. He's like, well, Lex, come on, I discovered these caves. It's funny because Clark's all excited to see him, like, hey, you're the guy that wrote that book.
Yeah, I know. He's like, yeah. I wrote many books.
Yeah, he just shuts him down so quickly.
And that's when I'm like, wow. Like, if someone came up to me like, you wrote that book, I'm like, yeah, thanks, man. Like,
I wrote many books.
You read my book, you know? Like, somebody read it. But he's like, I wrote many books.
So good. But
he's like, I don't care if you discovered the, what do you say?
I don't care if you discovered the Shroud of Turin. which is an interesting thing because I think most people say that's a fake. I find it a fascinating artifact, right?
But, I find it very interesting as well.
But I think that it's generally accepted that it's not accurate or not, you know, I think that it was made in like the Middle Ages is what they found, but there's all kinds of like carbon dating and fires. And look, if you guys have never heard of the Shroud of Turin, go look it up. It's very interesting. It's allegedly the burial cloth that they wrapped Jesus in after he died, but there's an impression of like a whole body and his face in there. So it's very interesting, like how that would even be put on there. And so that's a whole other thing, but everybody go look it up. It's a very interesting story.
Another Masonic reference for Clark.
That's true. That's true. I didn't think about that. Because you would think, like, he should have said something like the Ark of the Covenant, right? Because the Shroud of Turin has been discovered. Like, that's how we know what it is, you know? So anyway, but I appreciated the reference nonetheless. And Lex backs Walden up. He's like, Clark, look, this guy's the foremost authority in his field. If he works this way, we have to respect it, you know? And Clark and Chloe leave. Chloe calls Walden a cunning linguist before they leave, which is a bit of an innuendo.
Yes. I was like, and I was watching, okay, I rewatched it with the caption on because sometimes I like to do that just to kind of see like little words or something you might miss. And she said that, and I was like, okay, I need to look the way that's put on this here. Because that was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, when I was I didn't even know what that meant when I was a teenager, and I'm like, oh, okay. So yes, a small little slipping an innuendo there under the radar. But at this point, I have completely lost track of what day it is because Clark, it's like the morning, I think, and Clark goes up to his loft and he starts looking through his pile of CDs, which I thought was just kind of a funny early 2000s thing going on there. And Pete shows up and he's like, why did your parents call my parents? They're looking for me. And then he pulls out a piece of kryptonite and he tells Clark to stay the hell away from me, you know.
What a good friend.
I know, right? Like, this is why, Clark, you don't tell people your secret. This is exactly what your parents are worried about, right?
This is why when you say you need to go to the hospital and you have super strength and speed, you just grab them and run them to the hospital.
Well, he can knock people out. I mean, remember in Nicodemus, right, where he bops Pete on the head, knocks him out? He could have done that real quick and then sped him to the hospital. But look, it's all about the drama. It's all about the drama. So Clark x-rays Pete, and then he sees this bug crawling around inside of him, which is disgusting, by the way. It's gross. But anyway, it's officially confirmed that something's in Pete influencing his behavior. And before Clark tries to stop him one more time, and then Pete comes back at him with a kryptonite, he says, if you come near me again, I'll start selling tickets to your storm cellar. Which is like so funny. But
hilarious.
So wrong, though. Hilarious, but so wrong. So then, you know, meanwhile, I guess Walden and his team have been like, you know, working overtime because they're all set up in there. Maybe they use some of that scaffolding that the DJ had put in there and just use it for their own purposes.
I wondered after like that scene, I wanted to go back and check, like, was the scaffolding put in from the preservation team or was it the DJ that put it in there? Because I don't know about you, but if scaffolding is not cheap, and if I'm a DJ and I put it in there, I'm gonna take it with me.
Well, it's the kind of stuff that you see like events and all that, because it can literally go either way. But it's funny, you think back in season 2 and 3, like when Lionel's in there investigating stuff, like the scaffolding, all that becomes almost a permanent fixture in the caves. And so you would think the Luthers brought it in, but it was there at rave, so I don't know. But you're right, we never saw like the in between from like when Luther Corp or Lex Corp, whatever, took over to now. When so you never
L Corp,
yeah, L Corp, yes. Rebranding. So they have discovered the parasites. Walden has called Lex in there, and they're talking about the painting with the worm and the S on its head, and they both speculate that the Kawachi put them there to protect the drawings, you know, from, you know, intruders, right? So interesting.
That's right. The Kawachi,
yes. Interesting that this has not happened before, right? No one's been bit before. And then also, like, that's a pretty lame self-defense system if it's like you have to walk up to this one crack in the cave to be bit, like, on the neck. You know what I mean? They could have come up with something else.
I like to pretend that they were put there to protect it, but they were hibernating. And then the rave woke them up, and they're just like, are hatching.
Look at that. Look
out.
At that, man. Applause. Fanboy justification. You know, I like it, Tyler. Well done. Well done.
You got to think of something because, I mean, later we get the line of, we used liquid nitrogen to destroy the net.
Yeah. So, no problem
solved. We may have just discovered alien life, but we've just decided to kill it all.
Well, I think is there a couple left? I think because Lex has one sent off to Cadmus Labs.
Cadmus in Metropolis.
Labs, yes. His experts in Metropolis are getting put to good use. He sends one off. So we'll revisit what Cadmus Labs discovers at the end of the episode. But then we come back to the high school again, I guess. See, because Lana and Clark are supposed to be on this date, quote, tomorrow. I think tomorrow has already come and gone. And this has happened before on Smallville. Like, when they say, we're going to do this tomorrow. And then, like, by my calculation, it's been, like, 2 or 3 days that have passed. So like you said, it was a very long Friday or Saturday or whatever. I don't know. I've given up on what day it is for this episode. It's very confusing. I tried. The wardrobe was a nice clue, but then it also screwed stuff up because, like, Chloe wears the same thing 2 days in a row, right? Because if they go to the cave that night, this seems to be the next day there at school, and she's wearing that red dress that she's in a lot of her promo shots in, which is a very nice-looking dress. Allison Mack fills it out quite well.
we're talking about the outfit that looks – she has, like, a subtlety jacket, and it looks a little subtle, but as soon as she gets bit, somehow the outfit just – magically transforms to being very alluring.
Yeah, she takes this jacket off and she's got this very kind of low cut, you know, dress on. So yes, it's transformative, right? But Clark always does this with Chloe specifically. He walks in and she's making out with some random guy, and I love what she says. He asks for her number and he's like, why the rush is gone, and he leaves. And Clark says, who was that? And she says, I don't know. I met him in the hall, thought he was cute, and asked him if he wanted to do some investigative reporting, which is hilarious.
And here's what kills me. With the way Pete's behaving after the caves, Clark isn't immediately like, okay, Chloe, x-ray, something's up.
Right then he should. He's like, this is not like Chloe. Well, I would say it's not like Chloe, but like I said, he's always walking in here making out with some random guy. So it was Jonathan Taylor Thomas, Adam Brody, you know, it happens all the time.
That's true. But even the sharpest tool in the shed, or the dullest tool in the shed, might take a note at, hey, her behavior just changed after being at the cave. She's kind of acting a little bit like Pete. Let me x-ray anyways.
Right. The big dumb alien strikes again. So the BDA. But, you know, underneath this scene, we have I Just Want to Be Loved by AM Radio that's playing. So that's a good song. This episode has a few good songs, and we'll get to the main one at the end of the episode. But I just want to mention it here because it's not the one I'm going to play at the end of this episode. I'm going to play the last song in the episode, which we'll get to. But anyway, good song there. But Chloe is being very passive-aggressive and then also very seductive during this conversation with Clark. She pulls out this lollipop. It's like, yeah, very subtle, guys.
Yeah. I was like, wow. After her responsive dialogue to Dr. Walden and then this, like I said, Clark's too, like, dense to be like, okay, let's go to the hospital.
Yeah, exactly. But the purpose of this conversation is like, hey, Chloe, look, I can't get near Pete because of kryptonite, but I can't tell you that. But I can't get near Pete. Could you talk to him for me? You know, we got to get him to a hospital. He might be sick. And she's like, oh, sure, Clark, I'll do that for you. He's like, okay, I'm going to go now. But actually, very important bit of dialogue here. I think it gets completely brushed over. But he's like, all right, so get Pete and I'll meet you at your house. And she's like, it's a date. And he's like, ugh, and he leaves. But, you know, they're going to meet at her house, right? Remember that. So Clark goes to the Talon, talks to Lana, has to cancel their date because apparently this was the night for the date. And he gives her a reason. So it seems like, you know, it seems like they're actually pretty cool here. He's like, oh, Pete's really sick. His life could be in danger. We got to, you know, get him at the hospital. I got to help him. She's like, oh, I understand. He's like, well, I know I've done this to you before. I just wanted to give you an explanation this time. Like, oh, well, thank you. So they're cool, right? Everything's good. And then everything gets blown to hell, right, Tyler?
Right. And I'm like, you couldn't have been like, okay, Pete's showing the same symptoms that Travis was showing before he jumped to his death. They think it could be something that was going on at the rave. You know, just a little bit more info there, Clark, before Pete shows up looking fine. And you, all of a sudden, Clark, you look stupid.
This was so bad. This is why I want to mention they were supposed to meet at her house, right? So Clark says, oh, well, okay. I got to take care of Pete. Chloe and I are on it. Don't worry about it. You can't help. But, you know, we'll rain check, right? Everything seems cool. Pete and Chloe bust in. They're having the time of their lives. And Clark says, Chloe, we were supposed to meet at your house. So I was like, no, Clark. That's the worst thing you could say. Because clearly it's like you were going to go ditch Lana for Chloe and they were going to do whatever they were going to do at her house, right? So bad move there. And she's like, oh, wow, Pete. Lana sees them. She's like, oh, wow, Pete. Clark made it sound like you're on your deathbed. He's like, oh, I've never felt better. Clark says nothing. He says nothing during this conversation. Lana and Chloe and Pete are all talking back and forth. And he says nothing to speak up and defend himself. I guess he's afraid that Pete's going to say his secret. I guess that's why he doesn't say anything.
I guess.
That's the only thing I can think of, because, I mean, like, dude, like you said, Tyler, a little more information would have gone a long way. And then Lana just goes off into the back or whatever. Pete is just so quotable in this episode. He's like, Clark, you're my boy, and you've always looked out for me, right? So I get you. But he's like, I figured it out. On your planet, green means stop, red means go. And he slips him a piece of red kryptonite in his pocket, and we see the red eyes flare up on Clark. So we have a plus one for the amazing technicolor kryptonite, because we have a kryptonite again, which is, you know, anytime there is non-green kryptonite, it appears in the show, that's the counter I'm using. And then we have a plus four now for this episode for under the influence, because now Clark is under the influence, okay? So then we go to the Kent farm, and they're hanging out, and this is, you know, Pete, Chloe, and Clark, and Pete is talking to Clark. He's like, oh, can we tell her? Clark says, I'm surprised she hasn't figured it out already, which is very true, right?
Extremely true. And I always go back to, like, that trope that people used to use for Lois of, like, what you want is right in front of you and you can't see it. That's why she never puts two and two together. So I use that as my default of why Chloe hasn't figured it out.
So Clark starts showing off all his powers, right? And, like, Pete, like, breaks a bat on him, and then Clark, like, lights up a lantern, and Chloe's like, whoa! And Pete says, he's my brother from another planet. Which is ridiculous. So many quotable lines from Pete in this. And then Chloe asks Clark, can you fly? He says, whoa, I may be an alien, but I'm not a cartoon. So I thought that was pretty funny. That's sometimes these Superman references annoy me, but I really liked that one.
No, I'm not a Fleischer cartoon, Chloe. Yeah. She'd be like, what? Never mind, Chloe. Yeah.
So during all this, though, Lex shows up, and he's like, I hope I'm not interrupting anything. I think he said, I should have a counter for that. How many times does that happen, right? Clark says, you are. Which is, I wish people would say that more often. And this is a great exchange here. Chloe's like, does he know? Clark says, no. And then he kind of throws some shade at him.
Only people I trust.
Right. It's like, wow, red flags everywhere if you're Lex. Like, what is this guy talking about, right? So Alexa wants to speak to Clark alone, and Pete and Chloe leave, and Lex is like, you know, Clark, if I didn't know better, I'd say you guys were on something, which is an accurate assessment because they all are on something, you know? Again, Welling plays bad Clark so good, right? He's like, look, like, you know, have you ever heard of a phone? You just barge in here all the time like you own the place. It's so good, right? But, you know, this is Red Kryptonite Clark. Much like in Red, how Red K. Clark kind of stood up to Lionel, this is Red K. Clark standing up to Lex here. He tells Lex, basically, look, I'm going to go in those caves whenever I damn well please. So if you know what's good for you, stay the hell away from me, right? And then he pushes Lex out of the way. And Lex is like, man, what is this about, right?
This is probably like the least, like, Lex Luthery episode, like where Lex just basically plays the good friend, businessman, inquisitive person. Because, I mean, this totally, he'd been like, all right, Clark, this is enough of this childish stuff. Like, I'm just trying to help you.
No, for sure. The huge red flag. And Clark and Chloe, you know, well, they're driving to, they want to go jump the Forge or what, some fill-in-the-blank name Forge, right? And then Pete's driving in their car, and Clark and Chloe are making out in the back. What does Pete say when she crawls in the back seat there?
Dang, I didn't know you had all that, Chloe.
And he's like, oh, man, so quotable. But, okay, for real, though, shouldn't Pete have a problem with this? Like, doesn't he like Chloe? Like, it's been established, like, in the last episode, this happened to Pete, where he had a personality change, right? Nicodemus, he was all about Chloe and jealous of Clark, right? But he has no problem with that in this episode. It's been completely dropped.
Inconsistency of writers, that's all I gotta say.
Yeah, I mean, because it comes up again in season three, but it's just completely ignored in season two, which is odd. But anyway... Chloe wants them to stop at the Talon before they go to the Forge so Lana can see her and Clark together, obviously. And they have a really hot makeout scene here, if I don't mind me saying.
It's pretty intense because she's like, go get your manager.
Yeah, yeah.
And then like, I was watching this episode this morning, rewatching it, and my wife walks in and goes, so they're just going to have sex in the middle of the Talon?
Yeah.
I'm like, guess so. They're playing their invisible strip poker.
Yeah, exactly, right? And it's like, ooh, this is getting pretty hot and heavy. Unfortunately, it gets so hot and heavy that, you know, she rips Clark's shirt off, and then when they throw his shirt to the side, the red kryptonite is far enough away from him to lose its effect. So he, like, whoa, he's like, whoa, whoa, okay, whoa. He's, like, scrambling, like, put his jacket on, and he's like, Chloe, we can't do this. And, of course, right when she's, like, kissing him again, like, Lana walks in and sees this, right? It's like, oh, man, I feel so bad for Lana here.
I do, too. I mean, this is actually one episode where I'm not like, geez, Lana. Like, this one, I genuinely feel bad.
I'm 1,000% on Lana's side in this episode, yes.
Everything I feel like she does is justified because she's like, all right, she gives Clark a chance. He cancels. He makes out with Chloe. Because, you know, not to jump ahead, but she has a line later like, I understand why she was kissing you, but what were you doing? He couldn't have been like, Red Kryptonite. Red Meteor Rock? Sorry.
Well, see, here's the deal. And why didn't he just say that he had the same parasite, right? Are people going to go check the hospital records and be like, no, Clark, you didn't, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, you could have been like, I don't know, Chloe kissed me, and then after she kissed me, I just felt like a different person.
Right.
And I guess maybe the parasite transferred in saliva. I don't know.
That is
I'm
so,
not a scientist.
Like, in line with all the other ridiculous explanations they have. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, it's better than Lana. It's not what it looks like.
Yeah, Lana, it's not what it looks like. And Chloe's like, no, Lana, it's exactly what it looks like. Which is so good. I love Bad Chloe. Because Allison Mack hasn't got a chance to do this before. She didn't get, you know, hit by the Nicodemus flower, like, in the first season. So she hasn't got a chance to play out her character yet. And she's doing so great in this episode. But, you know, also she calls Clark out about her being his personal search engine, which is so true. Right, she's like, I want you, Clark, and all you want is my, you know, exposition, right? To paraphrase. Again, Clark is trying to get them to go to the hospital, but Pete punches him out with a piece of green kryptonite he had in his hand. And again, Pete's so quotable, he says, he may be a Boy Scout, but I'm always prepared. Which is so many zingers.
That's what I'm saying. This was Pete's episode.
Yeah, for better or for worse, I guess it is, Tyler. So Pete and Chloe go to jump the gorge, which will kill them, by the way, because Clark is not there. Originally, they were going to do it, and Clark was, like, going to catch him or something. But they're like, yeah, screw Clark. Who needs Clark? So they go to jump it anyway. Fortunately, Lana splashes some water on Clark and wakes him up in time to go save them. By the way, when he wakes up, he's like, oh, where's Pete and Chloe? And Lana's like, I don't know, and I don't care. It's just so
real.
Once
again, completely justified.
Oh, man. I thought this special effect here with the car jumping over the gorge and then Clark catching was pretty good. What about you?
Oh, yeah. I like how it was just like he just caught it and they were like, whoa, and he's just like, huh. And then he takes them to the hospital. You know, that thing that Tyler's been saying the whole time, just forcefully taking. Like, he could have used his heat vision and just welded them in the car.
Yeah, does Pete not have that kryptonite? Like, what has changed, right? Because, like, it's time for the episode to wrap up. That's what's changed. I like, though, it was a physical car. It wasn't a CGI car. You know, in the episode, I guess it's Pariah in season 4 when Chloe finds out Clark's secret and Alicia shows Chloe that Clark can catch a car, right? That's like, yeah. They always show that clip in so many things, Smallville. The car is so...
Get their money's worth.
The car is so CGI, though, in that shot. It's always bothered me, right? And I get they were trying... You know, it's a TV budget, and they're trying to do certain things with the special effect, but I don't know. It bothered me that that's so obviously CG. And you know, back in the first 2 or 3 years, they still had the money to do a practical effect, right? And so that's what we have going on here with the car. So I like that. But yes, Clark finally takes Chloe and Pete to the hospital. So we have +2, Chloe and Pete. Are both in the hospital now, so that's +2 on the tally board, and we have a +2 on the amnesia count, because not only does Clark go to check on Chloe and see how she's doing, he also goes to check and see us. So how much do you remember?
I just remember, you know, being in the cave with that over something professor, and then waking up after surgery.
And Clark's like, "Oh, all thank right. God." So it's great that they have amnesia. I guess what, your adrenaline is connected to your memory in your brain? Is that what the science they're trying to sell us on here? I don't know.
Alien bug. Alien parasite, man. Like, that's all you got to wrap it up.
This is always how they get away with it. Like, whenever anyone... See, when people get possessed, they can get away with it because, oh, it wasn't me. Someone else took over my body and I have no memory of their actions. But when you do it yourself, like, there have to be some other, like, reason. Like, I think the Nicodemus flower, they said it was because the fever was so high it burns your short-term memories or something. I don't know. Some BS excuse, but that allows them to do all these things, right? It allows them to do all these things that they want to do and that you want to see, that we show people out of character. They don't get to act that way usually. The problem is the consequences. The long-term consequences are non-existent for the most part on this show.
Except for Clark.
Yeah, Clark, because of the Red Kryptonite. I mean, this is now 2 strikes with Lana about Red Kryptonite now. So, like, whenever he's getting close with Lana, Red Kryptonite's going to pop up and screw stuff up. It even happens again in the finale. Anyway, Lana shows up to see Chloe. And it looks so bad on Clark's fault. He's on Clark's part here. He's like, okay, Chloe, well, I'll see you later. I promise. Like, it's like, what is... You're saying this in front of Lana. This is so bad, right?
Yeah, I mean, and Chloe's face, like... Just like, I don't remember anything. It's like, it's sold so well. Like, just, you believe her. You feel bad for her. You just want to hug her. Aww. Like, it's okay.
and then Lana, you know, Lana comes in, gives her some flowers. And, yeah, and Chloe asks Lana how the date went. She's like, well, I guess the date with Clark was a bust. And she's like, yeah, I saw him making out with some other girl. And Chloe's like, who was the girl? And Lana's like, I didn't recognize her. Which is like, I guess that's true, right? From like some certain point of view kind of thing, right, Tyler?
Oh, yeah, from a certain point of view. You know, if you're a Star Wars fan, you know all about certain points of view.
Exactly. Like, well, it was Chloe, but it wasn't Chloe. And, you know, so,
but it's also sweet just because Lana recognized, like, that something had happened to Chloe. So, like, and it goes back to that line we get here in a few minutes that I was talking about.
Right, for sure, for sure. No Bechdel test passes this week, huh? Because with this would, Clark comes up in every one of Lana and Chloe's scenes. So I would say this would be a fail, huh?
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah. So there you have it. There you have it. Then we have, we're wrapping up our last couple scenes here. We got the Kents and Pete wrapping up, patching things up. The Kents are pretty concerned about this. You know, Pete, you know, exposing Clark to green kryptonite and red kryptonite and shouting a secret to, you know, tourists on the tour bus. But then Pete comes by and he apologizes for everything. He feels bad. He's like, look, if you guys never want to talk to me again, I understand. But, you know, Jonathan is surprisingly soft on Pete, isn't he, Tyler?
Yeah, because he likes Pete. Pete's never really wronged him, and he understands, like, look, crazy stuff happens when Clark's around, okay? It's going to happen. And he was like, you know, Pete, you're, like, he understands. It's not like Lex, where everything Jonathan does hates Lex, even though every time he does, he's completely in the right for, so...
Well, you know, so all is well. Pete is still part of the family, they say. But as Pete said a few episodes ago, it'd be real nice if this family came with an insurance plan, because he's got cars and just broken bones, just always, you know. And, you know, man, Chloe and Pete should be in pretty tough shape from getting, like, some serious whiplash from Clark catching that car, huh?
Exactly.
You know, we got our wrap-up here scene with Lex and Dr. Walden. Turns out the Cadmus Labs did some research on the worm or the parasite, or whatever you want to call it, from the cave, and it turns out that it's not of this Earth. It's an alien, right?
And then he should have been like, oh, maybe we shouldn't have destroyed the nest.
Yeah, yeah, good call there, Walden.
Where's that line? Because that's the one I was waiting for.
So then Lex, you know, I really like... A lot of times in Smallville, they use the fireplace in Luther Mansion to kind of, like, frame Lex, and he looks kind of evil whenever he's doing dastardly deeds. It's like,
oh, but this was great.
Yeah, so he's like, he like leans over to the fireplace and like starts poking it and has this evil gleam in his eye. And Lex tells Dr. Walden that he's going to have to allow Clark Kent to be in the caves. And Walden's like, what is your fascination with this boy? as any like adult on the outside would be like, what is the deal? Why is this like 16-year-old your best friend, right?
How old do we establish we think Lex is?
Well, like, this season Lex would be 22.
Okay, I couldn't remember.
Because I'm going off. Everyone in high school is 15 in season one, and Lex is 21 in season one. That is what I'm going off of. So they're roughly, you know, 6 years older than Clark.
I love the response of Lex, where he's just like, I feel there. He's connected to the caves, and he knows more than we think. Even if Lex didn't want to be all, like, super mysterious, he's like, you know, Clark has a connection to the Kawachis, and they told their secrets. You know, something that just basically sets up, because, you know, he doesn't want to get the doctor on Clark's trail, but just the fact that Clark has knowledge of these caves that he feels he's not sharing, and that's enough for the doctor to be like, okay.
Right. Well, again, it's much like in Red, where Clark, you know, being all, you know, alpha dog to Lionel, there kind of piqued his interest again. Clark's being all alpha dog to Lex here in this episode. Red kryptonite in many ways is a lot more damaging to Clark's life than green kryptonite, right?
Oh yeah, because green kryptonite's like, oh, I was sick, or I didn't feel well, or I got injured. Common stuff. Red kryptonite, you know, you don't just wake up every day like, I'm gonna be a douche today.
Exactly.
I'm sorry, Lana. I slipped into douche mode today. You know, it happens, but it happens to regular people too, right?
Yeah, well, you know, we get our final, speaking of that, we get our final scene here of the episode. We got that Sixpence None the Richer's Don't Dream It's Over playing. Now, this is a cover of Blue Oyster Cult's Don't Dream It's Over. Have you heard both songs, and do you have a preference of which one, Tyler?
I have not heard both songs. I just remember the Sixpence version.
Mm-hmm.
Much like I remember the Sixpence version of There She Goes, which... I like the original better, but the Don't Dream It's Over, I just remember theirs. No, wait a minute. I do remember the original version.
Yeah, it's guy singing instead of a girl, for example.
Yeah, but I mean, like, the chorus. I remember the chorus. I don't remember the whole song.
Uh-huh.
I like the original.
Yeah, I like covers of songs. You know, remakes of songs are different than remakes of movies, for example. You know, because, yes. I mean, they're so short, you can, you know, relive them and experience them in a different way. It never really replaces it. New takes on things you like, I like. So, you know, I like both versions. There's plenty of space for both. But anyway, this is one of those.
Just like last night, I was listening to Iris by the Goo Goo Dolls. And I asked my wife, I was like, man, I love this song. And I was like, but I also really like the Newfound Glory when they did a cover of it, you know, and I played her for it. And like you said, covers of songs, there's room for both versions. You can enjoy them. It doesn't kill. I mean,
and it helps you from going crazy from listening to the same song over and over and over. Right.
Yeah. And I mean, I think also because if someone covers your songs, you get royalty from it. Look at Leonard Cohen, like rest his soul, you know, like everybody redid Hallelujah.
You know, my favorite version of that is from Shrek by Rufus Wainwright. Yeah.
Yep.
Hallelujah. They never play that in Smallville?
I think they did. Man, now,
I don't know which version they would have played. But 10 years, they must have played that at some point, right?
it just seems like it's a song.
There was a secret
code.
That's just a good song. And yes, if it fits so well in Smallville, and I'm sure if it wasn't played in Smallville, I'm sure the CW verse, the current one, will get to it at some point, right? I mean, hey, it's in Watchmen, right?
Yeah. Okay, that's the homework, Zach.
Yeah, we gotta research if Hallelujah was in Smallville or not. If not, it definitely should have been. So there's so many versions to choose from, to use. But anyway,
there's also so many verses.
That's like, true.
There's a version I have that I like. Like the musicianship's not the best, but he uses a verse that you don't hear hardly ever from anybody.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's like, oh man, I like that verse. Why don't other people cover that?
See, that's why it's good to have new takes on songs. So anyway, I'm glad that's been established here on Always on the Small. We are a fan of song covers. But so in this scene here, Clark makes a really pathetic attempt to apologize, which he even describes as such, right? He's like,
that's his cute card. Like, it's my pathetic way to apologize.
Yeah, it's like, oh, what did
like,
you
bring? Don't you just like how cute I am?
Don't you bring her a pizza and a rose? It's like, come on, Clark.
I don't know. Like, that would work for me if my wife showed up with like a pizza. Like, I'm sorry. I'd be like,
all is forgiven. Oh man. But
exactly.
He could have at this point. He either could have told her, oh yeah, well, I had the rush bug too, right?
Is that what we're calling it? The rush bug.
We're calling it the rush bug. Trademark, Always on the Smallville, the rush bug. He could have told her that. Or at this point, you know what, Clark? At this point, you've screwed up so bad. Like, this has gone so far beyond. Even in Red, it was pretty bad, but I feel like this situation was worse because it was Chloe, right?
Yeah, I mean, Red is like random chick. This is Chloe because it's that, you know, there's feelings from Chloe's side. It makes you look even more of a bad person because you're messing with someone else's feelings who right. You know has feelings for you.
She's your roommate.
Yeah, she's your roommate and your friend too. Like, Clark. And we had that nice little we're just going to be friends speech, the three of us.
That was 5 episodes ago. How quickly we all forget.
Well, I'm still waiting for, I think it's in season 5 or 4 where Clark's talking to, I think it's 5 because I don't think Jonathan's around. Maybe it's 6. Dang it. Maybe it's 5 or 6 where he's talking to his mom and he says about he likes Lana, but.
Wants to keep Chloe
he
in
wants
his back pocket.
In his back pocket, yeah.
Yeah.
He's interested in Lois.
Yeah, that's in Crimson. You know. Yeah, when he acts up at Lex and Lana's rehearsal dinner. Oh, so bad.
Yeah, because I love that line because I'm like, yeah, Clark, you just admitted that you're kind of a player for 3 women you want to keep in your palm of your hand.
Hey, man, don't hate the player, hate the game.
Is that a Pete line I missed in this?
Should have been. He should have easily said that. But I guess my point here is that this has gone so badly, Clark. You just need to tell Lana your secret now. You just need to tell her your secret. Like, look, Lana, here's the deal. Drastic times call for drastic measures, right? I'm an alien. I get affected by this rock this way, this rock that way. Let me show you my spaceship. By the way, I did save you in the tornado. I love you. You know, just get it all out there. Get it all out.
This is when he just goes, Lana, he just drops the pizza. He just, look, I've always told my wife, I was like, if I ever had superpowers and like we were fighting in this type of situation, I would just show you my powers. Like, I wouldn't try to explain to you. He should just grab her, super speed out of there, run some ridiculous distance, then stop, let her see, then jump, land, and then be like, watch this. Heat something up with his eyes, and then break something on him. You know, like, pull a tree out or something. And be like, all right, now, I have these powers. These rocks affect me. Just like you said, like blah 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 blah. I've saved you 33 times in the past year.
Let me answer all the questions you've always wanted to know. Like, now is the time. Now is the time. This is the fork in the road, right? And you chose to not tell her anything. So what she does is she shooes you away, takes a sniff of your rose, and throws it in the trash bin. And that's the end of the episode. So slow motion rose to the trash bin, by the way, which is a nice touch. So,
well, I mean, one of my favorite scenes is in season 5 where Clark basically tells Chloe, and he's like, I'm not even from this galaxy. Like, and Chloe's like opening her mind to everything, you know, and it's just like, I'm still the same person. And Chloe like accepts it, gets it, and like it starts to make things clear. I'm like, I get the trope of not wanting to tell your secret about stuff. And I mean, maybe if they had played up the angle of the meteors destroyed Lana's family and that she hates the meteors and like she has a grudge against meteor freaks, you know,
which they do that a little bit in season 3.
Yeah, yeah. But you know what I'm saying? Like, if that had been, I think, like, should have been a tighter thread in the first seasons, like, to why he doesn't want to tell her or why he's afraid
to
tell her.
Don't they do that in season 4 in Scare, where, like, that's Clark's nightmare that Lana finds out that came with the meteor shower so that's in the back of his mind all the time. But yeah, no, I guess what the problem with finally telling Lana when he told her like in the end of season 6 was she had already kind of known so much about him for so long, it's lost all its impact.
Yeah, it's like, well, I guess I could, like, it's one of those things like you're past the point of really forgiveness and understanding. It's like, it's been too much, Clark. Like, I can't accept this. Like, here you have that chance to come clean and start new
before there's too much water under the bridge. But yeah, that's the end of Rush with that slow motion shot of the rose and the trash can, which we immediately pick up on in the next episode of Prodigal. Like, that's a, like, direct sequel. Like, it's like the next morning and that rose is still in the trash can, you know? So
or she just kept it there. Like, it's been 2 weeks, but she's just kept it there. So that every time Clark shows up to grab coffee, he looks over and there it is. And
she leaves a note and like on the staff bulletin board in the back, do not empty trash can, leave Rose.
Leave Rose for Clark Kent.
So good. So good.
Professor, I just got off the phone with Cadmus Labs.
The dissection is done, I take it.
The creature's physiology is completely unique. Its DNA is unlike anything on this Earth.
Are you suggesting that these parasites are somehow alien in origin?
I'm hoping the symbols on the cave walls might answer that question.
Then I better get to work.
Before I allow you to continue, I'm afraid you're gonna have to make a few concessions, Professor.
We've already negotiated my fee.
This isn't about money. You're gonna give Clark Kent unfettered access to the cave.
Just what exactly is your fascination with this boy?
My instincts tell me Clark knows a lot more about that cave than he's letting on.
Rush got an 8.3 out of 10 on IMDb. And Neil Bailey from the Superman homepage gave it a 2 of 5. And here's just a brief snippet of his review. He says, all in all, there were many flaws. No real character direction. The thing with Lana and Clark and the lying has been done before and well. You might remember the episode, Red. And a repeat of a plot already done this season. You might remember the episode, Red. There is also mischaracterization and failed attempts to make things seem cool that really weren't, like breaking a bat on a head, because you get all caught up in the failure of plausibility. I think what happened is Loeb wrote Red, it got fan reaction, so they told the new writer for this episode, not Loeb, I looked it up, to write another one like it, but not it, and this is what we get. An average mid-season episode that lagged in several critical ways. I like Chloe getting freaky, but there has to be a reason for it. So, again, 2 out of 5 from Neil Bailey. So, Tyler, on our letter scale, our letter grade scale that we do on here on Always Hold On to Smallville, what would you give Rush?
Well, I call Rush kind of like a pizza episode of Smallville. You know, like, even when pizza's bad, it's good. And you're like, it's Smallville, so you know, it's bad, but it's still kind of good. So I give it kind of a C+. Like, that's being generous after we've talked about it more and had fun with it. Just because I agree with what Neil said, you know, like, there's not much to it. It's just a rehash. It is, like I said, it's fun to see Pete get to do more and actually be prominent. It was fun to see Alex and Mac do some different acting, but everything else is a rehash. The only thing that really moved anything forward in this episode was just Dr. Walden in the caves. So, but what about you, man?
I'd probably give it a B minus because I enjoyed it a lot. Like I have all the same problems, and you know, we've been complaining about it quite a bit. But you know, I see all the same problems, but I really did enjoy it. I enjoyed Alice and Matt getting something new to do. I like the introduction of Dr. Walden. I really like Lex in this episode. Like we were saying, he didn't have like an evil ulterior motive at any time. He was genuinely just trying to figure out the caves. And he was trying to help Clark. And again, I love Tom Welling as bad Clark. He's so good at it. Like, man, like if they just, if Superman was a villain, Smallville would have been a much more enjoyable show because I just always enjoy seeing Tom Welling get to play the different shades of Clark.
If they would have just, you know, made something better with, I hate calling him this, I really do, but Clark Luthor.
Clark Luthor, yeah. Why is he called Clark Luthor? There's no explanation.
I know. It kills me because, as you know, Clark came from Martha.
Right.
And why would you name your kid Clark? No, he should have been like Leon. I don't know. What's some crazy Greek with an L name?
Lucius.
Yes.
Lucius Luthor.
Boom.
There it is.
There.
So that is a very generous B minus, but I enjoyed the episode. Like, yes, it's totally less than the sum of its parts. They don't fit together very well, but it's just an enjoyable episode with some cool stuff, some rehashed stuff, you know. But it is a kind of a mid season lull. I mean, Smallville has these ebbs and flows to it. I mean, we just came off a couple of really good episodes, I thought.
They're like, hey, we've done too well. We got it.
Yeah, bring it back. So that's my rating. So a C+ for you. And a B- for me. So our final order of business, Tyler, is the series tally board. And boy, this is probably the biggest addition we've had yet. So get your pencils and calculators ready, guys. So we have a +1 for the Amazing Technicolor Kryptonite. So that brings us to 2 so far. We have a +2 for the Amnesia count, because Pete and Chloe both had amnesia. That brings us to 13. We have a +1 for episode title said in episode. So that brings us to 12. We have a +2 for hospital visits for Pete and Chloe. Again, that brings us to 20. 20 hospital visits. Okay. We have a +1 for a Smallville High School student death. That brings us to 6. 2.5 seasons. We have 6 students that have died already. They would have shut down this school a long time ago. And then finally, we have our under the influence +4. Right? For that's for Travis, Chloe, Pete, and Clark. And that brings us to 11. So 11 so far under the influence. And of course, as we discussed in brief, Tyler, the Bechdel test is a fail this week. Lana and Chloe's scenes pretty much revolve around Clark in some form or fashion. So that's going to do it for the tally board. So we're racking up the numbers after this one, huh?
I really cannot wait to see this tally board when this show is over.
We're going to be in, I guarantee you, we're going to be in like triple digits of like under the influence for sure. So that's going
to
be fun.
I just can't wait to see the red shirt.
Oh, the red shirt, blue jacket.
Red jacket.
I am too. Yeah. I think literally, I've said this in the last couple episodes, but I think every single episode of like season 7, I think he wears that. Like, I think every single one. I'm not sure, but.
So what you should do is when you watch season 7, is keep a separate tally of scenes of the episode where he's not wearing it.
Yeah, I might.
Because I remember at the end of an episode, the one where they're filming the Warrior Angel movie. He's wearing just a white shirt because he opens the gift and it has the red cape in it.
The blue shirt. Yeah, the blue shirt.
Oh, it is a blue shirt. Yeah. Okay, never mind.
And then, but
never
he, mind. He walks off and the cape's sitting outside and everybody's like, oh, isn't that an awesome Superman moment? I'm like, no, it's him walking away from his destiny. So I don't like it because he's like, he leaves the cape on the like the fence and then goes back inside the Kent farm to do what? I don't know. Nothing.
Chores?
Because it's season 7 and no one else lives there except for him. What a degenerate, Clark. So anyway.
You're still living at your parents' house.
Grow up. Oh, man, good stuff. Well, Tyler, it's a pleasure as always talking Superman with you, man. If people want to find you out there on the internet, where else can they find you?
They can find me at JTYPatrick on Twitter and basically anywhere, Yahoo, Facebook, Gmail, Instagram, as well as on the Krypton Report podcast, which is part of the Legends of DC podcast on Southgate Media Group.com. We talk Supergirl, but it started as a Supergirl podcast, but now it's just basically anything super related. I'm trying to find a really good term, you know, general for Superman and Supergirl. We just did a quick, I don't want to say a review, it was just like a quick promotion discussion for Lexmas as a holiday episode, just because like it's one of my favorite episodes of the series, and I just loved it to promote something Superman-y to watch that's easier for people to watch, because I know they did an episode of Lois and Clark for Christmas, but you can't find that anywhere.
Our friends at Lois and Clark, the new podcast of Superman, will be disappointed. that, but it's
like,
true.
Like, we have it on DVD. I'm like, I know you do.
It's hard to
track
down. But
I can't recommend it to people. Like, even my local library doesn't have it, and they have everything.
Apologies to Matt Truex. We cannot find it on streaming anywhere. I'm sure there's a website somewhere that streams it. But yes, I will be back on Lois and Clark to, when they start their season 2 coverage. I'll be talking at least one episode, maybe more. I actually bought the Lois and Clark season 2 DVDs specifically for that reason, because I had season 1 and then I just didn't buy any more because that's what was recommended to me by the internet. They're like, okay, if season 1's good, but stop there. I was like, okay, season 1 was good, so I will stop here.
I have season 1, 3, and 4. I can't find 2 anywhere. Like, I could buy it on Amazon. But
well, I got it on eBay for $10, my friends.
I like to search for stuff and find it. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's always fun. Like, I got seasons 1 and 2 of the old Adventures of Superman. You know, I found it 1 at Best Buy, 1 at Target. You know, I'm not in any rush to get them. It's not like the new stuff.
Us collectors, man, it's all about the search, right?
Yeah, like, you know, you're into half-price books or something.
Half-price books is the best.
You pull out your, little list you got, your little PDF list on your phone. Like, okay, what do I need? What do I need to search for while I'm here?
Exactly. No, I'm the same way. I'm right there with you, man. Anyway, as for me personally, you can find me more on Zach on Twitter. That's MOOREONZACH. And as for the podcast, you can find us at Always Mallville with 1S on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at Always Hold On to Smallville, and you can send us an email at alwaysmallville@gmail.com, once again with 1S. Well, that's going to do it for us this week. Once again, Tyler, thank you very much for being on, man.
Oh, thank you. You know, anytime.
And we will be back next week talking about Prodigal, the one and only appearance of my favorite plot hole in Smallville, Lucas Luthor. Can't wait. But until then, always hold on to Smallville. Dream.